Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Dr. Bruce Ashford. He is a theology professor at Southeastern Baptist Seminary, which is in Wake Forest, North Carolina. He also writes sometimes for Fox News Opinion, and he's the author of a new book published by Broadman and Holman called Letters to an American Christian. Bruce, or Dr. Ashford, great to have you on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Jerry, thank you so much. It's great to be on the show.
Okay, so give us an overview about this book, Letters to an American Christian.
Yeah, so this is a fun book. This book is a series of 26 very short letters that I've written to a hypothetical college student named Christian who's trying to make his sense of this political, you know, all the political issues that we've got, social, cultural, and political issues in the U.S., and this college student is trying to figure out how his Christianity relates to each of these issues. So in each of these letters, you know, have a lot of fun, able to use some humor, make some cultural references, but more than anything else, have tried to show how the truth content of the Christian faith helps to shape the way we view each of these major issues. And then I've tried to show this Christian that I'm writing to how to be persuasive. How's a way that you can find some common ground with the person that you're debating and be persuasive instead of off-putting?
Okay, and issues would include abortion, LGBTQ, racial tension, gun control, immigration. Why don't we start with immigration since that's been in the news a lot lately?
Yeah, great. Let's do that. Just quickly, you know, what I do is I encourage Christian to combine two biblical principles, justice and mercy. That's probably not surprising. A lot of people say that, but the devil is in the details. And so I walk him through what justice looks like in immigration. And before I do that, I talk about, we begin talking about what it means to have a nation state, and that a nation state has the right and almost always the responsibility to secure its borders. And that's not inhumane at all. That's actually humane. That's something that we have to do. And so sometimes you have, you know, religious calls for open borders, and I just don't think there's any good biblical argument for why that ought to be the case. And so once we've secured the border, then I talk with Christian about how we can make laws that are humane in case someone breaks the laws and so forth. So, so a combination of justice and mercy.
In the example of somebody having a door to their house and they lock the door to the house, they're not being unkind necessarily. They are just trying to prevent some of the, you know, potential problems. In some ways, it's almost like the open door people where there's, you know, unlimited, unfettered access, let everybody in, you know, without any kind of, you know, order to it, is kind of like having a door unlocked and forcing people to have that door unlocked.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, America's had a lot of problems with immigration over the past few decades, and one of them is that we've had laws on the books and we have not enforced them. And what that does is it sends mixed signals to people outside of the border that say something like this: yeah, we know we've told you that we're locking the door, but we really don't care if you break it down. And so we're in a situation now where we do have to secure the borders, and where I think for people who are here and are undocumented, we need to have a humane way of working through their documentation with them. If they're a criminal, we can send them back and ought to send them back to where they came from. However, if they're not, we should consider giving them, I think, a path to legal status that doesn't imply chain migration. We don't have to let, you know, 100 of their family members in at the same time. And so I think there's always a way of upholding justice, but doing so in a way that's not unnecessarily harsh or treating people in an inhumane manner. Does that make sense?
Sure, absolutely. Okay, gun control. And by the way, this radio studio is located in South Florida, not too far from Parkland. And a lot of the kids out of that tragic shooting, you know, it's good that they're, you know, concerned and motivated and so forth for positive, for change. And I'm not sure I agree with all the change, because it seems like they're saying they're just blaming the guns and they're blaming the NRA as if it was the NRA that pulled that trigger and so forth. So how about the issue of gun control, especially in light of these school shootings?
Yeah, good question. So chapter 15 in the book is entitled Letters to an American Christian. Chapter 15 is entitled Hitting the Bullseye in Gun Legislation. And so basically what I'm trying to do in the chapter is to challenge the assumption that many Americans have that Christians ought to seek some sort of strict gun control and that that'll be a silver bullet that will stop the violence we've got in our country. And what I argue is that there's no silver bullet for reducing the violence that we've got aside from the Lord's return. That would be the silver bullet. But we've got three debates we've got to sort through, I think, on gun rights and gun control. The first is the legal debate. And there's a Supreme Court case, D.C. versus Heller in 2008, that concluded, and I think rightly so, that citizens have the right to keep and bear arms outside of the context of a state militia. So we do have that right. It's a constitutional right. Then there's an ethical debate, which is, should a Christian want to own a gun? Now, I'll admit that it's difficult to imagine Jesus packing a 357 Smith & Wesson Magnum, 357 Magnum long barrel, which is what I own. But Jesus came, Jesus' mission was to die on a cross, okay? And so his mission was to make clear that at this point in his life, he wasn't going to use force, but that later when he returns a second time, he would. So I don't think that applies to us. Jesus' turn the cheek analogy doesn't deal with self-defense, it deals with vigilante justice. So he's not telling us that we can't defend ourselves, he's telling us that we ought not to try to seek justice ourselves in a way that police officers should seek it. Jesus never told soldiers to put down their weapons, and so forth. And then finally, so that's the ethical debate, that I think it is ethical. It's okay to own a gun. I own one to be able to protect my family if I need to. Then finally, policy debate. You know, the Constitution secures our right to carry guns to protect ourselves and our family. I think there may be some minimal cases of gun control where we perhaps block sales to people on terrorist watch lists. But strict gun control will not reduce criminal violence in America. Violent offenders already have guns. The people who'd be giving up their guns in obedience to the law would be the law-abiding citizens,
right?
Not the criminals. Furthermore, even if you took the guns from some of the criminals, they'll find other weapons like underwear, shoes, and box cutters.
Or knives.
Look
at the example of London. London is having this big problem because, okay, they have no guns there, right? Not even the police in some cases. But what happens? They're having a situation where there's so many murders from knives. Now they're even having a debate. Well, how sharp should the knives be? And, you know, should we start having knife control? Seriously. It's like, no, folks, it's a sinful heart of man. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so, you know, if we abolish guns and tell people they can't own guns, then what we've effectively accomplished is we've allowed hundreds of thousands of criminals that reside within the borders of the United States of America to keep the dozens or hundreds of guns that they own.
Absolutely.
While the rest of us don't have any. Yep. So I think we need to avoid hoplophobia, one of my favorite terms, and that is the excessive or extreme fear of guns.
What's the word?
Hoplophobia.
What does hopla mean?
Well, a hoplo just has to do with firearms. It's an old word that has to do with firearms. So that was a free literary nugget for the day.
Okay. LGBTQ issues, transgenderism also. What does your book have to say about that? Short version.
So what I'm basically trying to coach people, coach a Christian toward doing, is to be able to respect a person who experiences same-sex attraction, or a person who is confused about their gender, to give them the respect and dignity due to them as human beings created in the image and likeness of God. That's one thing that I'm trying to do. Because there's some Christians out there, not many I think, but some, who aren't giving other people the dignity that they ought to have. They're mocking and insulting and so forth. We don't need to do that. So let's give them their dignity. Let's love them genuinely, embrace them as human beings. But also the best on gender, let's take the gender issue for just a moment. The best therapies for people who experience gender confusion are therapies that help them to live in conformity with their God-given sex, with the body that they were born with. And that, this is what I call in the book the art restoration view, that human beings are the work of God, the handiwork of God, like a piece of art, and that because of the fall, the piece of art has been distorted in a number of different ways. And it gets distorted differently and in unique ways, you know, for different people. So I've never experienced gender confusion. You probably haven't either, but other people have. What we want to do is we want to help that person restore themselves to be the to this the state that God intended as his handiwork, as his work of art. Then the same thing when it comes to homosexual marriage. I argue that homosexual marriage is actually a category confusion, that there may be such a thing as a homosexual relationship, even a loving homosexual relationship of some sort, but it's not a marriage. A marriage is something between a man and a woman, and it's ordered toward procreation. And so in both of these chapters, I try to give Christians some ways of talking with other people that gives them the dignity that they deserve and hopefully allows them to persuade and win somebody over who doesn't see things the way they do.
Hmm. By the way, just before we go to the next issue, would you say that much of this book is geared towards millennials or geared towards young people?
Yeah, so, you know, I had to pick a person that I'm writing to, and the person that I'm writing to in the book is a college student who is at an elite university, at a private university, and all of his professors are secular progressives, and then some of his relatives, on the other hand, are, I don't know, kind of some extreme or aberrant versions of secular conservatism. And so I've taught him, I'm trying to coach him to cut his own wake. I think this is a really good book. It's entitled Letters to an American Christian. Really good book to give to millennials and Generation Z, teenagers, college students, young professionals. But hopefully also it'll be helpful for the rest of us who are older, our 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, that it's just a book that tries to help people see how Christian scripture can shape our views on political issues and shape our disposition and demeanor in public life. I think that's an important one, that our disposition and demeanor doesn't contradict the truth content of our views. So if
Excellent. We're
promoting a gospel-centered view, we ought not to do so in a mean-spirited or dishonest manner, for
sure.
example.
Okay, well, I'll ask you about abortion, but before I do, I just want to just ask real fast, does the book mention socialism or communism at all?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've got a chapter entitled Let God Be True and Every Ideology a Liar.
Mm, good.
And I deal with basically idolatrous political ideologies that elevate some aspect of God's creation and worship it as if that aspect were God. And so socialists, I believe, elevate the utopian idea of material equality. They elevate it to the position of a God. And socialism functions as a false system of salvation. That's what I argue in the book.
Okay. And how about abortion? We have time for maybe that. We'll close with this, but go ahead. Abortion.
Yeah, great. So chapter 10 is entitled Unborn Lives Matter. And in this chapter, I'm coaching a Christian on how to persuade somebody on the matter of abortion. And I give him two basic ways of doing that. One way is to use scriptural reasoning, to go into the Bible and to talk with another person about how God has created every human life, including an unborn life, in the image and likeness of God. This is a really surprising teaching, a powerful one, and also other types of scriptural reasoning, that Christ, Jesus, came to earth to shed his blood on the behalf of, any human being who will believe.
Mm-hmm.
And but then I give him some other ways of persuading and convincing. Let me just give you some sociological reasons that Americans should be against abortion. The first, and an obvious one, is that it hurts the baby. A baby, an unborn baby in the United States, has less legal protection than a spotted owl. That's a fact.
Wow.
Far less than a spotted owl. Abortion also hurts women. It teaches women that it's okay to kill their baby, and it encourages male irresponsibility and sexually predatory behavior, which in turn hurts families. It hurts men. Men have no power whatsoever over whether or not their baby's life is taken. It undermines justice and equality. Just a few years after the Civil Rights Movement, after we declared that we could not take a class of citizens and declare them subhuman, just a few years after that, in Roe v. Wade, we took an entire class of human beings, unborn babies, and said, for you, we will not guarantee justice or equality.
Mm. All right, we're basically out of time, so let me go ahead and give people your website here, bruceashford.net. The name of the book is Letters to an American Christian. Bruce, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you. It's great to be on the show.